Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Same rules as usual, Ruth.
Are we going to have to sit like this the whole time?
I'm afraid we are. Same rules as usual, Ruth. No swearing, no libel, usual rules. Because this is our last one. This is our very last, this is our last one, officially. Our very last official podcast. Everything's for the foreseeable future. So thanks to Talk Radio and then The Times for looking after us, especially to Matt Hall. So thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
The thing is, I suppose we're in the same position as loads of people. See, what worries me about the...
We're unemployed.
what worries me...
Well, I am.
We can laugh, you see. But what worries me is that because the economy is going to go into... Well, it's already into a nosedive and it's a recession and it's going to be the longest recession in living memory. What, obviously, companies...
Probably.
Probably. Fingers crossed. Well, but almost
you
certainly.
You never know what's going to happen,
almost
do you?
Certainly.
If it's uncertain about anything positive happening, it also has to be uncertain about anything terrible happening.
It is, but economics is a science. It's not like astronomy or anything like that. It is.
No, astronomy is also a science.
Astronomy is the good one, isn't it?
Astrology's not. So, I think the astronomers out there might have something to say about that.
I always get them mixed up, astrology and astronomy. It's like I can never decide, is it good to be in the red or in the black? Because red seems to be, you think...
I can never remember whether you should be off the wagon or on the wagon.
That's another one, isn't it?
I've fallen off the wagon.
And I've got back onto
the wagon. So the wagon's good.
The wagon is good, but you want to be on it. Oh, no, you want to be... The wagon. No, the wagon's
no,
bad.
Because people say I've fallen off the wagon when they stop drinking. And it's good that you want to stop drinking.
Right,
so it's good to be on the wagon. No, the wagon's good.
Oh, the wagon's good.
Because people are like, oh no, I've fallen off the wagon.
Anyway, what does worry me is that the economy is, like I say, economics is a science. And I read a piece today which said the recession could cost more lives than the virus, which seemed to me to be quite plausible in that this guy obviously looks at GDP, gross domestic product of various nations, and has found that over the years, I mean, statistically, it can be proven that if your GDP goes down, it costs lives. You know, more people die
there's
earlier.
There's the bit in the
richer
Big Short when he says... They're celebrating over having shorted the housing market, which means loads of people will become unemployed, and they're celebrating. And then there's the fact, and they're like, did you not know that every 1% unemployment raises, like, 20,000 people die? Like, in bigger amounts than will die of this virus.
Yeah, precisely. Therefore, arguably, I know that...
This is Dad's hot take that just makes him sound like an absolute... Makes you sound like a Stalinist, but go ahead.
What? Why does it make me sound like a Stalinist? Opposite, actually.
No, Stalin would be... This was what Stalin would say.
No, this is not what Stalin would say. It's what I'm saying and what various experts back me up on. And that is that what will happen during the coronavirus, and I can speak as one of them, as an older person myself, I can say that people may very well die. And in each case, let me say, it's an absolute individual tragedy and total sympathy for anybody who's going through that. But people will probably die 4 or 5 years earlier than they may otherwise have died. You know, either people with an underlying medical condition or people who are older. There won't be, they're
no,
not new deaths, if you like.
There's plenty of people who have underlying medical conditions around my age who would have no need to die of this, who wouldn't die in 5 years.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
And hopefully those people, when medical decisions are made, those people were kept alive because it's worth keeping them alive.
Yeah.
You know, but...
But I think that over 70s would have something to say against that.
Well, maybe so, but if you look at it, I'm thinking of people who... Not, I mean, people like us, we're fairly fortunate in that we've got we've got a fairly big house and can be can stay separate. We've got a lot of bedrooms here, so
it's pretty empty as well, considering we're not all here.
There's only the three of us here. I mean, I can find a bedroom and hide from your mum for at least an hour until I'm found.
And I'm struggling to hide from you.
Well, at the moment you're doing your last Ruthie Uni Dad and Me, previously known as Ruthie Me and My Dad. Your last podcast, but that's why we're not hiding you. But what I'm saying is I worry about people in tower blocks. You know, there'll be just near where Martha is in Kennington, your sister, just near where she is, there are loads of tower blocks, people will be in two-bedroom flats up on the 12th, 13th floor, you know, with three kids. I mean, it is a prison sentence, but unlike a prison sentence, you don't actually know when it's going to end, you know, and that must be absolute hell. And the people, they'll lose their jobs.
I think we're all understanding a little bit how terrible not being allowed to go out and about is. Like, I think... that a lot of people think prison is this really cushy life, and they don't think that prisoners.
I know,
a lot of people do that. They say, "Oh, prison, it's you're fine. What's the big? You know, there should be harsher things." It's one of the reasons people say that the death penalty is necessary, that because they think that prison is just it's too good for people. But I think this, on some tiny scale, does show just how horrific prison must be.
Yes. On the other hand, there are people in prison with you. On the other hand, there are people.
Yeah, I mean,
You know, maybe they're trying to rape you, but they're still in prison with you. But you know what I mean. There is some society in prison. There's the exercise yard. People take up a skill in prison.
Yeah, I mean, we could do all that as well.
Yes, we could do all that. The point I'm making is that, as far as a class issue goes,
the poorer being in this situation and after it's all over.
See, I'm fed up reading journalists. Every day there's a column in one or two of the papers saying, how we're coping with the crisis. They're not coping with the crisis because, you know, they live in nice houses probably they may even have moved to their second homes. I know somebody who's moved into her second home. You know, people will do that and then they'll happily write these columns. I want to see a column written by somebody by a poor person who's in a tower block on the 15th floor with three kids, because, you know, they really are suffering. And they're suffering even more because they know the other side of it. They may not have a job. We've had our podcast canned. No big deal for us. But you know that people will be looking at balance sheets in the way they've not looked before. All those people who work in Debenhams, who work in, department stores, whatever, they're not going to all, you know, get their jobs back. Yeah, pretty much any job. But all big corporations, big companies will look at their balance sheet and say, can we afford to keep all these people? And with the economy going, the answer is no.
Yeah. I also worry about, like, again, it doesn't seem important because it's like the arts, which aren't, but you do worry about what theatre, cinema, museums and galleries will look like. Like, will they put money back into those things afterwards?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the same issue, isn't it, really?
I mean, I watched a really interesting, like, video essay the other day that was talking about how this coronavirus is the death of expectation. So it's like, he was saying that he had a chronic illness, and so he kind of compared it to that in that he got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and so, which changed your life massively because you have to change your diet loads and stuff and you're not able to do all the things that you had done. And he said he always had this expectation that he would be able to eat popcorn. It wasn't particularly important to him. He didn't even realise he had it as an expectation, but he just always thought he would. And then all of a sudden you're diagnosed with this thing and you know that the future is not going to look the same at all. You've had all these plans and this way that you'll live your life and you imagine it all. And then all of a sudden, that's just not how it's going to be. And there's nothing there to replace those plans. You just kind of have to get your head around the fact that it's nothing's going to be the same. And then he was saying, and that's much like this, in that all of a sudden, all the expectations that we had of our lives, that we were going to be able to go and get a coffee and go out to shops and to clubs and to restaurants, these things that you didn't really, you know, there was no plan for it. I wasn't like, every Tuesday I'm going to go to a restaurant, but you had the expectation that you always would be able to do those things. And then all of a sudden it's the death of this expectation, and there's nothing there new to replace your plans. There's no, you don't think about the summer and there's now these new things. It's just kind of like,
it's the suddenness of it
all,
isn't
it? It's the suddenness, yeah.
And it's also the uncertainty. We'll come out of this, right? I assume at some time, even if it's a year's time, at some point or other, we will come out of this. It may very well be there may be more pandemics. We don't know. You know, I don't think we'll come out of it cleanly. I don't think it'll suddenly be one day we'll wake up in the morning and Boris will be on the telly saying, go out, have meals, enjoy yourself. That's not going to happen.
But that's never how pandemics have worked.
No, but at some point, there's going to have to be a new, different world built, and it's going to be your generation. So probably all the stuff about climate change and all that will have to be built into it. You know, things like, I would hope and think that people would move closer to a plant-based diet, maybe including fish and things, because this is really, in many ways, you don't want to point the finger of blame at the Chinese, but I think you have to, because those wet markets, and they will eat all sorts of stuff, the Chinese.
Have you actually properly read about wet markets and stuff? Because it's such a massively complex issue. Like, I watched, there's a channel on YouTube called Vox, which do a lot of like explanation videos or sort of investigations into things you haven't really thought about before, that you've heard about on a base level, but never properly, it doesn't tell you in detail. And it says about how the SARS epidemic was also in
a wet market as well.
And about how in the 70s they got banned and they brought in these wildlife protection laws, and then people started starving because they just couldn't feed themselves, so they brought back in, they took away these laws, and it was a lot of just this subsistence farming that went on with these wildlife. Subsistence farming that went on with these wildlife, and then it was fine. And then all of a sudden it changed to the selling of the wildlife, which was actually for this like minority elite, and actually the vast majority of the population don't eat any of these things that they sell at wet markets. It's just this elite.
It's bushmeat, so isn't it?
They're putting it on.
Is it bushmeat, which is a term for, you know, eating stuff like?
I've never heard of the term bushmeat, to be honest.
Oh, it's well known. And they put, I mean, I saw a story
last week. The wet markets are really, it's like really complicated, and labelling it as like a Chinese thing is just not true, because it's a small minority of the country. You wouldn't call, like, I'm trying to think of another example.
It happened in China.
It happened in China, but it's not a Chinese thing.
Well, I'll tell you what is a Chinese thing, and that is eating every part of.
But that's not all Chinese people either.
No, but generally part of the Chinese culture is, you know, if you're going to... I had a mate, and we used to go into Chinese restaurants, and he used to turn to the back of the menu where it was all written in Chinese, and just... For a joke, he would order something written in Chinese, so he had no idea what he was ordering. And it was invariably some bit of an animal that you really would not in normal circumstances eat. You know, he was an adventurer, so that was his adventure. But they do, you know, whatever it is, donkey knuckles, whatever, they will eat all that stuff. And I think the world generally, if you want to rebuild it, maybe it has to be rebuilt.
Yeah, but I definitely think that China will bring back in these wildlife protection laws, which will stop the wet markets and stuff. But I just think labelling it as Chinese virus is just
stupid. Yeah, well, that's true.
But that's what you're doing as well.
I'm saying, why deny stuff? It's from China. I'm not denying that it's from China.
No, that's all I said.
I didn't call it the Chinese virus. I said it's from China.
I feel like placing the blame on China like that is kind of wrong, because it's not... And place the blame on Chinese government, who have changed the laws to protect a minority group rather than the majority of the country. But not Chinese people.
No, but I'm saying in the world at large, we have to stop eating stuff that's just, you know, animal stuff. Do you know, I read one this week about some sausages being sold in South Africa, which were found with kangaroo meat in them. You know, they were supposed to be beef sausages or
but then also, don't you think that that's a massively, like, Western way of looking at things, that we've decided what's okay to eat and what's not okay to eat?
Yeah, I think, I think we're a developed part of the world. And that's
developed is completely, it's the whole thing of, like, it's the same, it goes back to the same thing of, like, white Western people went and civilised the rest of the country, the rest of the world,
well,
when
we
didn't.
We have to do it remotely now.
No, but we didn't civilise anything. You know, Aboriginal communities were not any less civilised, they were just different.
Well, you could argue different cases for different places. We did, you know, it's like you say, what did the Romans do for us? Well, you know, but the roads, the aqueducts.
But that's not what we did for Aboriginal communities.
Well, it's in
especially
some places,
in places
some places
like South
isn't.
Africa.
Well, it,
what have we ever done
for the South Africans? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, or take a much more well-known example, which is of America, so of like Native American communities. We said we civilized them. What we really did was wipe out massive, like, whole communities.
That's the American story.
And tribes. Well, no, that was us.
Now, in this enforced era of isolation, so it's just the three of us, it's myself, your mother, and you, cloistered in this fairly big house, which is good to be. You've turned back to the television.
I've watched more television in this last week than I have in a year.
Mm. Well, you wouldn't watch anything as lowbrow as Britain's Got Talent. However,
no, of course not.
Of course not. But you are prepared to watch the arty version of Britain's Got Talent, Portrait Artist of the Year.
What is the fascination with that? Oh, it's so good. I would genuinely really highly recommend it. It's on Sky Arts channel. Maybe it's not the most popular programme in the world.
Well, it is. It's become huge.
People keep talking about it.
Yeah,
I've watched it since it started.
Double-page feature in the paper.
It started in, like, 2013. I've always watched
it. I read what it says.
It says, a big thing.
Watching paint dry, it turns out, might not be nearly as boring an aphorism as we have been led to believe. The Sky Arts programme, Portrait Artist of the Year, has turned the slow process of painting a picture into a spectator sport. The programme invites portraitists from across the country to compete. Anyway, it's getting good. There's 1,000 applicants have filled in the entry forms for the next series. Loads of people want to do it. And I noticed you were sort of...
Oh, I'm just drawing. But these guys are incredible.
Are you going to apply?
Oh, my God, no. But these artists are... They're so incredible. The ones who are amateur, like, there was a... I can't remember whether it's a girl or a boy. I don't remember. Anyway, they were only 16 and they were just sitting their GCSEs, but had done this incredible portrait and stuff. It's really impressive. I had started drawing again because I've not drawn in years, but you've got a lot of free time on your hands.
Should we have a bit of music, Ruth?
Yeah, let's.
Well, let's start with yours. Bigfoot, get out the way. I'ma show you how to move this skate. I'ma show you how to move like this. I'ma show you how to move it. Woo! Bigfoot, Bigfoot, get out the way. So that's Childish Gambino, which we have played before.
We have played before. We've played his song Feels Like Summer, but he's just brought out a brand new album called 3/15/20, which obviously it's just the date. No, well, 3.15.20, and that was the song 35.31. I just thought, it's what I've been listening to just to pass the time, and it was nice to have some new music, and it's a nice, jolly song.
Yeah, it's jolly. It cheers us up during the current...
Yeah, nice little dancing song. And obviously, I've spoken about Childish Gambino before, but just really briefly, he's Donald Glover, Donald Glover's...
Pseudonym.
Pseudonym.
You didn't know that last week, either.
No, I didn't know... I said pseudonym, but I meant something else.
You meant euphemism.
I meant euphemism. But that's it. Pseudonym for Donald Glover, who is... so talented, and is also an actor and a producer and stuff.
Good. Shall we hear mine?
Yeah.
Mine is back to 1971, and it's Isaac Hayes.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? You're damn right. Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Can you dig it?
Well, there you are, Ruth. Can you dig it?
I didn't love that song, to be honest. Those kind of songs always sound like they're just from an advert to me.
Actually, well, it probably has been used in an advert, I'm sure. It's an absolute classic, though. It's Isaac Hayes, theme from Shaft. But I thought it was quite interesting because I can now introduce you to a genre of cinema you may be not aware of.
Oh, yay.
Which is blaxploitation. Have you ever heard of blaxploitation?
Mm-mm.
Well, in the early 70s, that's 71, it was from a film called Shaft. And if you listen to the lyric where it was Isaac Hayes saying, who's the black private dick who is a sex machine to all the girls? They were exploitation movies. They were originally white movies. And then because there was a shortage of black heroes in movies, this genre, blaxploitation, or a subgenre they always call it, grew up with people like him. And they were reprehensible, but they were black. And they used to show these films in places like Harlem, and the theatres would go berserk, you know, and they'd love but it's great tracks, the actual theme music for these movies, and, you know, some of the incidental music. I know one we had Across 110th Street, which we played.
I liked that one, actually.
Yeah, well, that's also from a blaxploitation movie. And it was the first genre in which black characters and communities were the main heroes of the movies. Isaac Hayes, have you heard of Isaac Hayes?
Yeah, I have heard of Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, he played Chef in South Park, which he had a sort of late flowering. He was a songwriter, producer, and the Stax label. I think we've played Atlantic and Stax, Southern Soul, really. And he wrote songs for Sam and Dave, and Carla Thomas. Yeah, I'm just trying to widen your musical education. A lot of emails this week, Ruth.
Oh, really? I guess people have got some time on their hands.
Well, people have got time on their hands, and also they may sense the fact that we might not be here much longer.
Well, yeah, because it is Ruthie, uni dad and me, and there is no university
at the
moment. There's no
uni. I can see the logic of it. And hopefully we'll be back.
But also, I don't think we've addressed the fact that we're recording this at home, obviously, today.
Obviously.
Because it's isolation. Mm-hmm. So if the quality is not up to their
normal
standards. Oh, the
quality won't be up to the normal standards.
That is why. I just thought we should tell them, you know, rather than it just look like we thought, oh,
well,
it's the last one, let's not bother.
Well, it's very interesting you say that, because the first email I've got here is headlined, Ingénieur de son gratuit pour le podcast. Which means, as you know, sound engineer free for the podcast. It's from Erin O'Brien. Engineer of sound, I suppose. Erin O'Brien says, Hi, Ruth and Martin. I came across your podcast on the journey home from Liverpool Uni to London yesterday. I'm a second-year music student. Because we're now online only, I'm heading home to isolate with my family for the next several months. It's a five-hour journey, so we listen to two of the shows, the first and last. Brackets, just 92 more to catch up on. It was good. I enjoyed it and found it really interesting. I go through the same kind of discussions with my dad, and it was a rare chance to listen to the almost same conversation between another daughter and father combo. I did have to pause quite a lot so I could explain what you were talking about. You, I suspect. My dad listens to talk radio, so has heard a number of clips from the podcast. And because he'd listened on Friday night, he'd already heard the bits around teaching French and the need to use the word free a lot. You didn't make it clear your French lessons were free. Although I'm getting one tomorrow morning. Have you forgotten that?
Making me.
Yeah, well, I'm getting a French lesson tomorrow morning. Hence, says Erin, the reason for getting in touch. I, too, am going to be looking for things to do over the next few months. And from what I picked up yesterday, you won't be able to get into the studio to record the next however many episodes of the podcast. Well, it's just this one, really. And you'll be recording on your phone. As mentioned above, I'm a second-year music student and training to be a sound engineer. If it would help, free of charge and with no obligation, I'd love to use my skills to sound engineer the podcast.
That would have been lovely.
Well, we'll see. I've got a really good ear for editing and fixing vocals. And one of my strengths is being able to pick up, which obviously if you're a music student, probably is a specialism you would do. I've got a really good ear for editing, blah, blah, blah. And one of my strengths is being able to pick out and get rid of unwanted frequencies. So, you know, when it distorts a bit, unwanted frequencies. I can use my time to make the show sound as good as possible. I mean, given the content as well, don't forget.
Yeah, it's only as good as possible, you know.
Yes, we're talking sound.
It can only
sound.
Go so far.
Of course, we're talking sound quality. With whatever kit you'll be recording on, I've got a recording studio at home, well, a bedroom with the necessary kit. So all I need is a sound file and 24 hours to get it back to you. Well, I might very well send it to you. I could email it off. Well, we'll see what it's like.
Thank you for the offer.
Yeah, thank you so much for the offer. She says, if you're interested, happy to have a call on FaceTime or Skype to talk through how I may be able to help. Well, I'll put Ruth in charge of any calls. Anyway, we'll do that, Erin, thank you. Richard Shaw Wright is somebody who I actually know, but he says, French lesson. He says, there aren't enough podcasts. Do a French podcast. He says, having nearly studied both German and French with GCSE last century, I can only ask someone where the train station is, auf Deutsch. Other than that, become a YouTuber. Good luck, says Richard. He says, who is a crony, but he's only a 39-year-old crony.
Oh, young.
Yeah, young crony. Neil Vicker says, well, again, he says...
He's closer to my age than to yours.
Yes, he is.
Not mad.
Isn't that ridiculous? Neil Vicker says, one probably not for laughs and bants. Well, nothing's really for laughs and bants now. He says, brilliant podcast as ever, particularly the one this week. It's gone down very well.
Oh, really?
94.
94's gone great.
Yeah, 94 is you know, a really popular podcast. Anyway, he says, I broadcast a hospital radio show in Evesham, and we've been told we now can't go into the building, so I wondered if there was a software package or trick that we could use to get around this remotely.
These are more sort of practical emails, aren't
they? Practical emails, but I like to tell you what we've got in the post. I use a thing called IPDTL, which is working very well for me, but you'll need an Ethernet cable and a bit of an adapter. Donna McManus said, I was heartened to hear your latest podcast this week.
Heartened, yeah.
In these bizarre times we're going through, I'm sorry that Ruth wasn't able to complete her first year at university. Fingers crossed she'll be back there soon. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
But as we've already discussed in the great scheme of things...
No point making plans.
It's a small tragedy, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Ruth, I know you said you don't watch much TV these days. Well, she does these days. But if you're stuck... And let's face it, you might be at the moment. I'd recommend The Stranger on Netflix.
Oh, I've had this recommended to me so many times.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I need to watch it. Mm. It's not really massively up my street. It's like a thrillery type crime, like investigation. I don't think it's real life crime. I don't think so. I'm not quite sure what it's about, but it's not. It's not my usual go-to what I watch.
She says that I might like that as well. She says also more light-hearted, Celebs Go Dating on More4.
I've also been recommended that actually recently because I've never seen any of the Celebs Go Dating or the Undateables or anything.
Well, Ruth!
But,
let's hope it's not over too soon until you've watched all that stuff. She says, More4, this series has been hilarious and really made me laugh out loud. I have Love is Blind on my list to watch. But I've been put off by how American it is. Take care of yourselves and keep making the podcast. They'll probably be mostly COVID-19 related, I imagine, as most conversations with my friends are. And that's Donna. And Martin Bolton says, this week's episode, 94, was one of the best you've done so far.
Oh, there you
go. I thought we were just hitting our stride when I got the call.
It took us 94 hours, but...
Yeah. You've done so far with two different perspectives on the current situation. My youngest daughter, Carrion, is in her third year at BCU. Something University, BCU, do we know what that is? And was told yesterday...
Bristol, maybe?
Yeah, possibly. Told yesterday, that's it. The rest of her tutorials will be online. And if she graduates, her certificate will be sent in the post with no ceremony.
That's even worse, being a third year.
Third
no
year
graduation.
Is worse, yeah.
No.
Third year, definitely.
You don't feel like you've properly finished it, would you? Yeah.
Going back to the Portrait Artist of the Year, I believe...
This is probably the podcast that will speak the most of Portrait Artist of the Year. That can be our USP.
Yeah, well...
The only podcast with at least 20 minutes of Portrait Artist of the Year content.
Well, one of the sitters, you said Harriet Walker, and I said Harriet Walter. I've got a picture of her. Is that the Harriet Walter? Well, she's got advice for those of you, I mean, clearly at the moment it's not going to happen, but those of you dealing with lecherous men at university and how you
ought...
Lecherous.
I've never heard that word before.
Haven't you ever heard the word lecherous?
No.
It means men who behave inappropriately.
Oh, I assumed that from the context. But.
Yeah. Well, she says, feminists, this is her line on it, she says, feminists should, quote, talk to the enemy. And it almost sounds like it should be a song, talk to the enemy. Talk to the enemy. And explain to lecherous men why their behaviour is inappropriate, the actress Dame Harriet Walter has said. Walter said that men would never understand why their actions were harmful unless women educated them. They need talking to about why things are wrong, like, it's not that you touched me on the leg, but it's the fact that you're in a position of power and I didn't ask you to and you invaded my space. Or, can I put my hand on your knee instead? And how would you feel about it if I did? She added, being uncalm doesn't help because that person won't ever understand what they did wrong. And won't ever dare to ask. So her strategy...
I completely agree with that.
Her strategy is to have remain very calm and almost unaffected by it.
Yeah, I can't really get on board with that. I don't think it's women's job to teach men in later life how they're meant to act. I think the right thing is to be outraged because it's outrageous that someone would do that. Mm. And the idea that men don't know by now what's right and what's wrong is... You know, it's not women's job to teach men how to behave.
And tell me, Ruth, have you anything that's... During this great coronavirus... I mean, you may have another angle on it that I've not covered so far.
About coronavirus?
Well, about anything. I'm just wondering... It's very difficult. I mean, there are no other topics really about... Apart from what you've been doing during the...
What have I been doing?
I know what you've been doing. I've been seeing you.
Yeah, this is why it's boring, isn't it? Nothing to catch up on. What are you meant to chat to people about? That's the thing, you know? How was your walk today? My walk was fine. How was your walk?
I walked down to Sainsbury's and popped into Poundland.
I can't believe it's still open.
Well, of course it is. How are people going to get food if it's not open?
Yeah, no, but I wouldn't have thought they would have kept Poundland open. I thought they would have literally just kept, like, Sainsbury's, Tesco, Asda.
Well, there's not many shops anywhere. As I walked past Poundland, I did think you've developed a bit of an addiction to flying saucers.
Did you buy them? It's not my fault. I've written a note next to them saying not allowed, you know?
Have you?
A post-it note is on the bag.
But you said you liked them.
You've got to have a treat.
It's
bad for me.
You've got to have a treat.
They're bad.
I bought some crunchy bars for your mum from Poundland as well, because she likes crunchy. It's the only chocolate she'll eat. But we all need a treat, I think.
Yeah, I know, but
I think chocolate and sweets are very important
to a new level. I was eating flying saucers like they were going to become the new currency, and the number of flying saucers you'd eat was going to be how much you were worth in our new post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah. But there's nothing in them. You could probably eat two packets
They're not like if you ate like a full bag of, like a massive bar of chocolate, like that would be a lot. There's nothing to them, but that's why they're so dangerous.
So interestingly, Poundland, they said keep 2 metres apart.
Mm.
And my friend Paul says, if you want to judge the 2 metres, he says, imagine a chalk outline around a dead body.
Yeah, that's I saw someone saying that's
exactly 2 metres.
Imagine your dead grandmother.
Mm, yeah. When I was walking through town to get down to Sainsbury's before I got to Poundland, when people were approaching me, I was sort of walking out towards the curb and quite deliberately sort of making a swerve. And then there was a black guy coming towards me, and I just wondered if he might think it was racism if I did that.
Garbage.
It's my USP, Ruth, to use your word. So, yes, and then I walked down to Sainsbury's.
This is genuinely the most boring content we've ever
had. I was about to say, and there's nothing really to tell you about
there.
That. Well, I think people will be interested in the fact that flying saucers are now your treat of choice when they're so...
Oh, I love them.
They're so sort of nebulous, flying saucers. They're really
I like a sweetie more than a chocolate.
I noticed that,
In case you were wondering, which I doubt you are.
Anything on your mind at all?
You know, the only thing that is on my mind a little bit is productivity. and how the this like quarantine or isolation or like the fact that everyone's working from home or not working anymore gave way to this productivity, like this like push for everyone to be productive all the time and to be like on a schedule and do this and do that and take up a new hobby and do this. And it's like, no, we're in the middle of a national emergency. If the fact that you probably can't quite focus on anything that well and you might not be producing your best work, like you shouldn't be putting pressure on yourself to write some kind of masterpiece or paint a portrait or become fitter than you've ever been before, or like use this opportunity to lose the weight that you've never been able to. Like, we are living in unprecedented times which are incredibly stressful on a subconscious level, regardless of whether you're going through a tragedy or not. And that pressure to be productive or to come up with some kind of genius, I find just so, not even like stressful, but also just really annoying.
Well, I think what we should do, Ruth, is starting from next week, we should do a playcast, which is a much shorter podcast, maybe just about 1/4 hour, 20 minutes. And I quite agree with you about trying to come up with a work of genius. You won't come up with a work of genius. You won't even write a half-decent novel. Nobody will. Stig Abel put it on Twitter. He said, if you're writing a novel about coronavirus, stop. Nobody wants it.
I was on like a conference call thing with the
writer. But we can do a playcast.
Yeah.
We can do
but
that.
I was on this conference call with this like writers group that I'm part of and stuff. And they were saying, so they're all actual writers, and a lot of them, their career is writing and stuff, so they write full time. And they were saying, oh, I feel all this pressure to write something like about coronavirus or something where a plague is the back setting, or should I work it into my writing that I've done already, and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, but there are going to be a heap of people who have never written in their entire lives who think, ah, at last, the gods have given me something that I can write about. And that is not it. If you think that this is going to be the time where you're finally, you know, that saying where it's like everyone's got one good novel in them.
No, they haven't.
that's your daily dose of positivity.
Yeah, you're not going to write a great novel. And if you go down to the bookshops, you can't now because they're closed. Waterstones closed up, they all closed up. But if you do go when Waterstones opens again and sheds quite a lot of staff, I suspect, and you go in there and look, there are too many books. There are loads and loads and loads of books. And basically, if you haven't written a great novel yet, the reason probably is
not even if it's not a great novel. If you haven't ever written before, the fact that middle of a plague
doesn't help.
Won't necessarily mean that you are suddenly struck by genius. No, like anybody Shakespeare wrote King Lear, but he wrote a hell of a lot of good stuff before that.
Yeah, and also the fact is, it wouldn't have been time. It's not a lack of time that stopped you writing a great book. I've always found when I'm very, very busy, I'm more productive.
I don't know about that. Like, I think
if you want something done, ask a busy man.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. But when it comes with being creative and stuff, I think sometimes boredom does lead way into creativity.
It can do. But what I'm saying, it won't be a lack of time. You know, people always say, oh, I've got so many great stories to write, if I only had the time. Anybody's got the time. Even if you write it in the middle of the night, you've got the time.
Yes, person.
You know, you've got no more time now than you had. And what you haven't got is probably
the inspiration. But people who are writers probably can focus more on their own projects because they're not, you know, if you've had commissions fall through and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty valid.
My friend Paul, who's a novelist, has written 13,000 words in 5 weeks, which is very good, but he says they're not all that great words. He says only about 6,000 of them are good.
I can't remember what the name of the month is. It's like write a novel in a month or something. It's called like Wanoma or something like that. And people do like write a whole novel in a month. It's really impressive. You have to write like a lot of words a day, obviously.
Well, you'd have to write in a month.
You'd probably have to write about 3,000 a day, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. Ruthie, have you got anything to entertain?
To tie up this last Ruthie Uni Dad and Me, do I have any of my traditional things?
Do you?
Yeah.
Good,
the answer
tell
is
us.
More than ever. So, Your Fest, the site that has got all this stuff, they put out a post saying...
That's Confessions.
Confessions, yeah. At this time, we understand our platform is useful in spreading relevant information about the COVID-19 situation specific to the University of York population, and we will continue to do so while trying to stop the spread of misinformation. It's a very serious site for what is essentially a big joke. Anyway, and then they say, however, we are all in need of some entertainment, so we are asking for you to submit any confessions, stories or general other university-specific content to bring some spice to our news feeds. And people have responded in droves, and they are all... They're brilliant.
Oh, great.
They're mostly way too rude to read out.
I'll read them out.
No, Dad. They're like...
I can bleep them.
No, they're just inappropriate. Like, way, way, way too inappropriate.
That's a real shame.
So I can't read them. But, it's not right to either. They're people's confessions. You shouldn't read them out or whatever.
Well, put them on a website.
Yeah, they're anonymous and they're in the website, and that's the point of it. But they are hilarious. They're a lot about one night stands, and there's a lot about just like wetting the bed and pooing yourself.
Wetting the bed, one night stands, fantastic.
But this is so. There's lots of those. If you can imagine what they would be like, but I'm not going to read them out, especially not in front of my dad. But this one I did think was, this is what I thought was quite funny, that's not a confession. Is anyone else worried about the fact that, with the streets of York now completely vacant, the geese will soon begin to seize the town? Like, once this is all over, how are we going to reclaim the land from them without meeting considerable aggression? I hear talk about the amazing summer we're all going to have, but I feel like this is only the beginning of something far more grave.
Geese?
Because there's loads of geese in York.
Ah, right. It's a plague of geese.
Tons and tons of geese.
Well, I still want to hear about the one-night stands, but go on.
No, I can't. And then there's also been loads and loads of York rushes, because a lot of them are along the lines of, I'm sad that our university had to end so soon, or like, I didn't realise I was never going to see you again. This is how I would have said I felt, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot along those lines. This is one of my favourite ones. So this was SH... Worst thing about this virus is that I won't be able to see you next term. Please stay single so I can have a chance. There are a lot of very nice ones, and so yeah.
But read me one of the ones that's funny.
No, the ones that are funny are just, Dad, I couldn't even read them in front of you. Never mind, but you can. They're really, really rude.
So that's it. I mean, you can keep emailing us, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com, and we wish you would. Martin
we'll
and Ruth Podcast, we will reply, and we'll do one next week if I can motivate Ruth to join me in a plague cast. We'll do one next week, and if we've got something to say, you never know, we might have something to say that people haven't already heard.
It's unlikely, but who knows what the world will look like.
Who indeed.